This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
We call my plan Bidenomics. Guess what?
It's working.
I will say that there have been so many accomplishments under this administration, it can be difficult to list them in a distilled way.
I do not hate anyone. So I say this gently. The Biden administration sucks.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Well, I would rate that very true, I think, from Senator Kennedy. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. As we get rolling here on a Tuesday afternoon, Sue is on hold with Spire, and she may be that way the entire afternoon.
They said 1 minute.
Yeah, that doesn't work that way, right?
Oh, my gosh.
So she walks in. She's got the the Spire, you know, message going on speaker. But hopefully you'll get through. I think she got through. So she's done with this show. She's out of here. She's not going to deal with this. Fred, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. How are you?
I don't know because I can't hear you. So here we go. Yeah.
Is this any better?
Yeah. I think it's better. And everything sounds different from yesterday, so I'm going to adjust. They warned me that it would be the case, and I apologize to the audience. There's just a lot of transition going on right now, and every time I sit down, it's just a little different, so I'm trying to get used to it. You got to hold a little baby this morning, didn't you?
Yeah, that was great. You know, Trisha, one of our executives here, brought her baby, Bernie, in for his first St. Louis Odyssey tour.
Yeah, Trisha Everding, who's basically, she runs this place, and she's been gone since, when was Bernie born? Do you remember? It was like early July, wasn't it?
Yeah, it had
something like
been,
that.
Like
and
3 months
so,
ago.
Yeah, let me, okay, that's a good little point of reference there, 3 months, Fred, 3 months.
I would think.
Yeah, about that, right?
Right.
So, Bernie was born 3 months ago, and she just brings him in for the first time 3 months later today. That's, and most of us weren't here. Sue wasn't here. I wasn't here. Trisha Everding. Fred was here. Nobody else was here.
Yeah, so I was here,
out.
And I think she said she wanted to wait until she could make sure that it would be a good trip for everyone involved.
All right, well, we'll see how that
and
goes.
And I always liked holding, you know, Bernie. I was holding Bernie and walking around because I'm trying to nurture a future producer.
That's is that what
I
it is, Fred?
It. That's right. I
well,
start young.
Then you need to get him in here around me and see if he can take the abuse, because that would be something that would be required.
I
Ethan's like shaking
she,
his head, yes, yes, up and down right
that's
now.
That's why they waited till a morning visit
yeah.
when you weren't here.
Boy, this does sound, I don't know how it sounds to the audience, but this is going to take some, it's different, right?
It is.
Okay,
it
I don't
is.
Like it. Just tell the engineers I don't like it, Ethan. Whatever they did, I don't like, all right?
Okay.
Because it sounds weird. All right, we're going to get going here, and I'm going to try to get the weirdness out of my head as we get rolling for a Tuesday afternoon. Charles Lipson's coming up here in just a few minutes. He is the professor emeritus at the University of Chicago, writes for The Spectator and Real Clear Politics and more. He's always a great political expert, so we'll get him on in the 3 o'clock hour. We've got a lot of stuff going on, including Governor Mike Parson. They're going to execute Marcellus Williams tonight, which I think is a good thing, and I'll address that in just a few minutes. But let me kind of get, we'll get into this with Charles here in a couple of minutes as well. But there is a little bit of polling whiplash that's going on right now. We addressed this yesterday, and I don't know. I did have, Fred, I asked you this morning, did you hear Zig last night in the
yeah,
5 o'clock hour?
I did.
So he got a little, he was crabby, John Ziegler, right? But his point was, and let me see if I can kind of flush this out just a little bit. We were talking about the polls. John is not very rosy on the opportunity for Trump to win this. And he felt that some of the polling, there's this site out there, I like it quite a bit. It's called Real Clear Politics. It started as a polling site in 2000, during the 2000 election. And what they've done from, you know, decade to decade is they've grown. They have Real Clear Markets and Real Clear Sports. They have different aspects. They might not have the sports. They might have spun that one and sold it off. But they have different aspects to the website. But on the politics website, you see, and if you would go there right now, you'd see a collection of articles. They load these up every day, Tuesday, September 24th. Just to give an example, the first piece is Jonathan Alter from Washington Monthly on Pennsylvania and how important that is for the presidential race. Then Paul Bedard from the DC Examiner talking about some other things related to polling. And then there's a few other people. So it goes back and forth, and you don't just get conservatives. You get both sides, if not more than both sides. But they also have their polling site. And if you go to the right-hand side of Real Clear Politics, they show you the polling from state to state, whether it's the battlegrounds, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Wisconsin, on down the list. They show you where Trump is. Just to give you an example of that, Georgia right now, he sits slightly up, which is a good thing because we had some polling from Georgia last week, which didn't look good. He's up 2.1 in the average. In North Carolina, he's up 0.5 narrow, but that's good. In Pennsylvania, Harris has a slight lead. And then you can kind of tick on down and go through the list. Now, where John was challenging me is they also have this feature on Real Clear every day now. And I kind of like it because I think it's fun to look at. And I'll explain why in a moment. And I'll explain what he was saying. So it's this day in history, September 24th, and they do this every day. They have the average of the polls, and when Real Clear does the polls, they have a list of, you know, whatever the polling group might be, they list it. I'll just go to the national polling right now, and I'll tell you where the polls are, which polls they are. So you have CNN, Quinnipiac, Reuters, CBS News, Morning Consult, Rasmussen, NBC News, Fox News, New York Times, Siena, all these. There's a bunch in here. And just to give an example, in the Rasmussen one, Trump is up. This is the national poll right now. Trump is up plus 2. In the Atlas Intel poll, he's up plus 3. In all of the other polls, he is not up. Quinnipiac has it tied right now. Reuters has Harris up plus 6. That seems to be a bit of an outlier. CBS has Harris up 0.4. Keep in mind, even on the big spreads nationally, you're still looking at electoral votes, so right. It maybe doesn't mean as much. But anyway, they average that out, right? And then if you go to the page where they kind of break this down, it says, this day in history, 2016, Hillary Clinton was up 3 points nationally in the average. Joe Biden was up 6.9. He had a big lead in 2020. And right now, Kamala Harris is up 2.1. If you go to the battleground states, so let's look at Wisconsin. Clinton was up 4.7 in 2016. Biden was up 6.6. Harris is up 1 point. So what John was criticizing, and this is where I don't agree with him completely, is he says, and I'm not making this assumption, he feels that some people are saying, look, in Pennsylvania, Clinton had a 5.6% lead. And in 2020, Biden had a 4.3%. Harris only has 0.6. So that means Trump's going to win. He feels like some people are saying that. I'm certainly not saying that. I'm just saying that the polling, and it's certainly changed since 2016, does look relatively favorable to Trump, certainly compared to all these other times. Now, I'm not a big person that believes in everyone taking these polls right now. I believe in polling, and I think there's some science still that's valid in election and other things. But I don't know who's actually taking the polling. I think some people are shying away, and they're not answering. How many people in this room? So you're getting the text messages, right? Fred,
tons.
Are you getting text messages?
No, I'm not.
Okay, I don't know how I'm on the list, but I get a lot of text messages. And, you know, I've taken a couple of the polls, and lately I've just kind of, you know, sent them on their merry way, and I've just deleted it. But, you know, I don't know how many people are taking polls is my point. Are young people taking polls?
I get them, I put them in spam.
Right. Well, so that's what people say. People say, look, I don't believe in polling because, you know, landlines aren't being answered, which is true. But the pollsters have made some adjustments because this is what they do. And we'll get into this a little bit more with Mr. Lipson here in a few minutes. The bottom line is we still have a very, very close race. And there is increasing pressure on Kamala Harris to maybe say something about her campaign, which seemingly is not going to happen. So let me play you a couple of pieces of audio here from, you know, what they call a surrogate. A surrogate is out there who campaigns for the main candidate. It could be like when Trump was running in the past two cycles. They're not doing this as much. Maybe they are in the states that matter. But Laura Trump, for example, would be Donald Trump Jr. be a surrogate. I don't love surrogates. So someone will come on here. And if you can't get, I guess my policy, Fred, would be if we can't get the candidate, I don't necessarily want a surrogate, right?
Right.
But Missouri, you can't really even play that game right now because we're not in, you know, in contention. Fred, you remember if you go back to 2012, hell, John McCain called my show. You know, I think it was live on one afternoon.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Whoa, that's wild.
Well, because if you go to, well, that would have been 2012. That would have been 2008, because Romney was 2012. Oh, yeah. Because you remember that Obama was going to steamroll him. And, you know, then the economy collapsed and he was going to get steamrolled even more. But they, you know, they were doing interviews because at that point, Missouri was still a purple state and it was in play. We don't get that now. But my point is the surrogates still go on nationally, which is funny because if I'm CBS News or Fox or anyone else, I say, hey, we ain't taking the surrogates unless you're going to give us the candidate. And Trump comes on and he does interviews. Kamala doesn't. Now, this first person, I don't know who this person is, but I think it's still kind of fun to listen to here. This is Sandra Smith, who is with Fox, and she's interviewing.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This person who wants to tell you all about Kamala Harris's policy and how great she is here, right?
What is Harris's plan? We're waiting.
Yeah, okay, there's a lot of aspects to it in regards to looking at it online. So let's talk about lowering the grocery costs, because that's something that's brought up. The viewers can look at this online. She talks about certain things in regards to advancing the first federal ban on price gouging on food and groceries, mm-hmm. to set clear rules to the road to make it clear that big corporations can't unfairly exploit consumers as well.
Is that
and
happening? Secure new Is that happening?
Yeah, so she was, as Sandra Smith saying, wait a second. She's what? Doing this, she's doing that, she's going to say price, you know, price gauging, as Kamala called it. But is that happening? So she kind of followed up on this here.
Could it not at this moment? No, this is her plan that's laid out for the first 100 days when she becomes president of the United States of America.
Gouging, is that currently happening?
No.
In regards to I don't know exactly if that's currently happening or not, because I'm not privy to that type of information.
She's the best they got at the Harris campaign. So
that's
she goes
awesome.
Out, hey, let's pick this person. And by the way, I looked for her name and I didn't see it on the scroll, but she's an idiot. We know that. So we'll just, you know, describe her as idiot A, who doesn't even know what Kamala Harris is all about, because she's torn a couple of pages from Biden's campaign and from the White House, and she slapped them up on a website, and that's good enough for the American people.
But there are people are costing a lot of money in regards to groceries.
Okay, it seems like potentially you're having a hard time articulating her plan. And
I'm not. Honestly, that's not true.
All right, so this is fun too, because Sanders says, hey, it kind of seems like you're struggling here articulating a plan. And then she goes and she pulls the victim card. She says, I know you're talking over me here.
I'm constantly being interrupted by you.
No, you weren't.
As a woman, I think
the woman
is
card.
Disrespectful. When I'm trying to speak, every time I try and speak, you speak over
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Look, I can play all that audio again. I'm not going to do that. But you will not hear Sandra Smith talking over her. She kind of asks a question a couple of times. Then there's Mark Cuban on MSNBC.
I appreciate you calling in, telling us what you're hearing on these fronts. That's great. But as you've said yourself, you can't speak for the vice president. These are things they're telling you. Who knows what they're telling other people? My guess is they're telling anybody who's donating to them exactly what they want to hear at this point. What matters is what they say publicly and what they will stick to.
No. Absolutely, positively not. Right. Let me just be very clear.
I don't know. Like, why do you think that they're telling you the truth and not telling other people other things?
Well, I don't,
if they won't say it publicly, say it publicly. Tell all of us so that we can hold you to it.
I get it, but you've got to get the details right. You can't just.
Yeah, but we have 60 days to an election. Like, you're asking people to take a flyer.
Even if it's the day before the election, right? Even if it's the day before.
What?
No. Are you insane?
That's what he said. Look, it doesn't matter. This is what Hillary Clinton said yesterday. It doesn't matter. You're just being sexist. It's a double standard. You're asking her to do interviews. What? No, we're asking a presidential candidate to do interviews.
Yes.
I don't care if she's a woman or if she's a man or if she's in between, which a lot of people seem to be there. But I love the fact that it doesn't matter. This is how much they hate Trump and they don't care about anything else. So this is another one of my favorite moments. So this is Brett Stevens with Stephanie Ruhle from MSNBC. Brett Stevens is from the New York Times, and he's not voting for Trump. He makes that very clear. But even Brett Stevens, this is on Bill Maher's show. Brett Stevens even tries to say, look, shouldn't we be able to ask her just a few questions? I don't know.
I'm a decided voter. I'm never going to vote for Trump, but I'm not sure I want to vote for Kamala. And my fear is that she doesn't really have a very good command of what she wants to do as president.
You think? Okay, that was good.
It'd be great for her to sit down with you or George Stephanopoulos or you, Stephanie, and get a succession
as if she'd sit down with me.
Why not?
Well, I had to get that in there. That's Bill saying no. She ain't gonna sit down with me, right?
No, George W. Bush 25 years ago was asked if he could name the president of Pakistan and other people. He had no idea. And people said this guy has no command of foreign policy. And it turned out to be a prescient set of questions. It's not too much to ask Kamala, say, are you for a Palestinian state if Hamas is going to run that state?
Okay.
Yes or no?
Yeah, that seems to be a pretty big question right now. But she hasn't been asked that question. That wasn't anything that, you know, Dana Bash asked her.
Let's say you don't like her answer. Are you going to vote for Donald Trump?
No, I'm not.
Kamala
I just
Harris
said I'm not going to vote for her.
Is not running for perfect. She's running against Trump. We have two choices. And so there are some things you might not know her answer to. And in 2024, unlike 2016 for a lot of the American people, we know exactly what Trump will do, who he is, and the kind of threat he is to democracy.
I don't know.
He's a threat to democracy. That's Stephanie Ruhle. Now, listen to what she said there. It doesn't matter what Kamala Harris's answers are to anything. It is irrelevant. That's essentially it's not even essentially. It is what she's saying. It's irrelevant when her answers are because the big orange man is a lot worse.
I don't know her answer to anything, okay?
But you know
and
his
I think
answer
I,
to everything.
And that's why I would never vote for him, and people shouldn't vote for him. But people also are expected to have some idea of what the program is of the person you're supposed to vote for. You're just not supposed to say, well, you have to vote for Y because X is this, that, and the other. Let's find out a little bit more. And I don't think it's a lot to ask her to sit down for a real interview as opposed to a puff piece in which she describes like her feelings of growing up in Oakland with nice lawns.
Yeah. Is that too much? And that's the guy from the New York Times. Now, if pushed, I think Brett Stevens would admit, no, we don't really want her to do this because we don't want Trump in office. But I did think it was interesting that debate was happening. And again, that was on Bill Maher's show. All right, we're going to take a break. We're coming back with much more this afternoon. We're off and rolling here on a Tuesday edition of the Mark Reardon Show. Sue Thomas, are you going to Back to the Future, the musical tonight?
No, but it's only because I'm not on whatever list that is. I need
Damn
to call
we need
Julie.
To get you on that list, right?
Yeah, I would love to see it.
I'm looking forward to it. I don't know much about the music portion. I was watching the trailer, and it seems like they used some of the Huey Lewis music. And we had Bob Gale in the studio.
He was so great.
He was great a week ago. He's the guy that, with Robert Zemeckis, created Back to the mm-hmm. Future. Just hearing him talk about, you know, thinking about, hey, what would my mom be like if,
yes.
you know, I went back when she was in high school, and that's how he and Zemeckis kind of put it together.
So cool.
And it's been immensely successful and then turned into a Broadway musical that is now coming to the Fox Theater. So we look forward to that. I'm taking a hot date, Alexa Reardon. Tonight, she's very excited because she watched the movie earlier this year.
Oh, that is really
and
fun.
She loved the movie. And that movie, for those of you who have kids in that age group or grandkids, it is a good one for sure. Charles Lipson is back with us right now. Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago. It'd be fascinating to go back like 30, 40 years to when Lipson was in his prime. Not that you're not in your prime right now, Charles. I will say that. But how are you
let
this
me
afternoon?
Tell you, the one thing, let me tell you. The one thing I am really glad about is that there were not video cameras readily available when I was in my college years.
Well, you know, because right now, if you're a college professor, look, the students are going to record you. If you're doing something that they don't like or they think they don't like, they're going to put the camera on you, right?
That is so true. But what really worried me was when I was a student. All the things. Well, think about the things you did in college.
Oh no, I don't want to think about those.
You were at Mizzou, right?
Yeah,
you were at Mizzou. Yeah, pretending to major in journalism, and I was
yes.
I was pretending to major in political science, but. I'm just glad there aren't videos.
No, I know. You know, it's funny. Along those lines, I went to the Mizzou football game over the weekend, and we were going through an area to get to the tailgate that was right past where the University Police Department is, which is separate from the Columbia, Missouri, or the Boone County Sheriff's Department. And I was instantly, Charles, brought back to the winter of 1984 when I was booked into that police department. I had my fingerprints taken, and they took a mugshot, and they took a mugshot on a Polaroid camera. In the first one, the cop screwed up, and he hands it to him, and he goes, ha, don't show this to your parents, or don't. I'm like, you. But that was for a possession of a product now that is legal in most states, including Missouri.
Well, see, I have a story like that. Do you have time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I was at a drive-in, the Ranchero. Known as the Ranch. By the way, the best drive-in around there was known as the Elkham Rind, And it was because they had a big sign that said, "Welcome, friend," but the W and the F had burned out.
Wait, where was this?
This was in northern Mississippi.
Okay, all right, in Mississippi.
Okay, so I was at the ranch, not the Elkham Rind, and we had gotten some older kids. We had our dates, and we'd gotten some older kids to buy us some beer. Well, this turned out to be a bad idea, and even though we were sort of sitting plainly in the car. So we were taken down to the police station, and before my godfather came to bail us out, my high school, this was the next town, not my town.
Right.
My high school math teacher came to put in the good word for me and my friends.
Wasn't that nice?
The problem was he was drunk.
Oh no.
So I'm getting the word that I'm a great guy.
Oh my. Yeah, and that's one that sticks with you in the memory bank for sure. Well, he tried. A for effort, I guess is what we'd say. On that
front?
That's
it. Okay, let's talk serious stuff.
Let me start, before we get to the election, let me start with Israel and Hezbollah and some of this stuff. Now, I will candidly tell you that I was out a couple of days last week, and I never really got to address the technology aspect of this, because, and I don't even know if I've wrapped my head around the technology around all this with the pagers and everything that happened last week. Is there a way to explain that?
You didn't answer my pager.
No, exactly. But what happened there?
Well, I think it's probably the most brilliant intelligence operation that's outside of a James Bond movie.
Yeah,
totally agree.
I mean, what they had to do was plan years in advance to intercept the supply line. And now what we think was done was that the Israelis actually took over a factory many years ago to produce the electronic devices that were used by Hezbollah. They sold to many other people, pretending to be a real company.
Right.
They licensed and everything. But their real customer, the one that they were really interested in, was Hezbollah. Well, what happened, and this is the politics of it, as well as the spycraft. On October the 7th, right, we're nearing a year, when Hamas in Gaza attacked the citizens of southern Israel, kidnapped them, and so forth. The next day, the Hezbollah, which is in Lebanon, the other side of Israel, is also, like Hamas, is also an Iranian proxy. Hezbollah decided, we're joining forces with Hamas, and we will start firing rockets into Israel, which they did. But the head of Hezbollah, a man named Nasrallah, still alive, said, but we think the Israelis have penetrated our cell phone network. So don't use cell phones anymore. Use pagers. So they ordered thousands of pagers for Hezbollah members. That's when the Israelis shipped them the pagers from, it appears, Hungary. It may be Romania, but it looks like it was Hungary. And they had put small amounts, very small amounts, of explosive in there so that it would kill the person with, and they put in software and so forth, firmware, that could trigger it. But it was a small amount of explosives, and that's important because they were only trying to kill the person who had the pager.
Right.
Now, if that person had a small child standing, his own daughter standing next to the pager, then so be it. But and a very sad thing it was. But the fact is they could have used three times as much and killed a lot of surrounding people. They made an effort not to do that.
It is amazing, and it's, you know, maybe at some point someone's going to do a big special on this, but it seems to be underexplained at this point. And when I heard about it last week, I was fascinated by it. I think a lot of people were, and it's really interesting because of all the planning that had to go into it. Now,
they didn't tell the Americans in advance.
Ooh, yeah.
They thought that they may have told the Americans, oh, we have something that we're going to do or something like that. But they thought it would leak from the Americans. They had experience with the Americans leaking things to our enemies.
Well, that's unfortunate. I wish that wasn't the case. But what does this then, at this juncture, then mean for the broader conflict? We keep talking about more of a ground invasion, which still hasn't happened. But what are your thoughts on where this is now headed since Hezbollah is more involved?
I would say that when you knock out all the communications, then the next thing you do is start going after all of their long-range missiles, which could hit Tel Aviv and could hit Haifa. They could also hit Jerusalem, but presumably a Muslim organization wouldn't want to do that lest they inadvertently hit a Muslim site. But when you start doing that, it's what you would do prior to a ground invasion. Now, remember, what the reason the Israelis are doing this is that some 60 to 70,000 people have had to move out of northern Israel because they were being bombarded day after day by Hezbollah missiles after October the 8th. And so that's what the immediate goal is.
And by the way, I think that's another undercovered aspect of this whole situation. The 60,000 Israeli, yeah, because that doesn't get discussed a whole lot in the coverage.
And another aspect that's almost never mentioned is that not only were these missiles being fired, they were being fired from an area in southern Lebanon that was supposed to not have any Hezbollah fighters or weapons in there and was supposed to be monitored after 2006 by the United Nations. But the United Nations didn't do it. And that's very important, not only to just blame the United Nations, who wouldn't, but because it means that you can't just say, Hezbollah now promises to move out of this area and not fire missiles, and we'll let the United Nations monitor it. Well, they were given their chance. They failed.
Yeah. So then what, though?
I think it's likely that Israel... basically has finished, not quite, but finished 95% of what they wanted to do in Gaza. And the last, they've taken out Hamas as a military organization, probably not taken them out as a political organization. They've also established Israeli control over something that your listeners have probably heard of called the Philadelphia Corridor. And that is a strip of land that it is the border between the Gaza Strip and Egypt. And the reason that Israel wants to occupy it is that Egypt didn't effectively control it. They allowed Iran and Hamas to dig tunnels, hundreds of tunnels, under that area, smuggle in all the weapons they wanted, smuggle in Iranian military people to give assistance, and all the rest. Israel wants to cut that out in the future. And the reason they want to cut it out is not only because they want no more missiles fired into Israel from Hamas, but they don't want Hamas to gain political control thanks to their military weight in the region.
Makes sense. Charles Lipson, professor emeritus at the University of Chicago. Let's kind of pivot into the presidential race right now. And, you know, it's interesting. I have a whole array of pundits from across the country that join me like yourself. And if I were to go to all of them right now and just sort of take their temperature on where the election is, I think a fair amount of them would say, look, Trump's not going to win this. Harris is going to win it. Fair number of them would say, look, Trump's going to win. You know, it looks really good for him. You know, the polling is kind of all over the place right now. I know that you're focused, and I think everyone should be focused on Pennsylvania. The candidates certainly are, because it seems like it's going to come all down to Pennsylvania, Charles.
I think you're exactly right. I don't see how either candidate wins without winning Pennsylvania. I know it's theoretically possible, but it looks like Pennsylvania is the key state, maybe Michigan as well. But and in Michigan, there's one extra candidate that may make a difference, and that's Jill Stein, who used to run as a Green candidate, and now she's running as the anti-Israel candidate. And so she may pull off some votes, too. And it doesn't take many. See, here's the problem with polling. It's not just difficult to poll. The problem is when you're talking about, first of all, you have to do it state by state because you can't average up Ohio and Pennsylvania. Right. Ohio is going to go Republican. You need to just take Pennsylvania by itself, and you've got to make sure that you're not just polling in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh because they're going to go Democratic or the middle of the state. Somebody once said it was a Philadelphia and Pittsburgh with Alabama in between them. And you've got to get them all. And if the margin is 20, 30, 50,000 votes, well, the margin of error in even the best
very narrow is not, yeah very narrow
it's going to be very narrow. So you've got a real problem there, and you can also see that there are quite a few close states, including, quite surprisingly, North Carolina.
Yeah, I don't know why. I saw polling today. North Carolina seems to be in a little bit better shape for Trump, but that, no, right now it's like 0.5 is the average. You know, one thing that struck me before I let you go is, and I've seen a number of focus groups, and I played some of the audio from one of the focus groups yesterday that was down in Georgia, in particular, African American focus group. I was struck by the amount of African American people on a couple of panels that I've seen that have had this level of distrust of Kamala Harris, and also didn't think that she had the leadership capabilities. Charles, look, that's stating the obvious. We know that, right? But it's bleeding through to some of these undecided voters, including African Americans. So I find that rather interesting.
I do, too. And, of course, they're hurt very badly by competition in the job market and competition for government resources by all the illegal immigrants who've been let in across the border under the Biden-Harris administration. So they're angry about that. Remember, she grew up politically in California. And the illustration I would make is Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan comes from an Irish-American family. If he'd grown up in politics in Massachusetts like Tip O'Neill, he would have been an Irish politician. What was his nickname in California? Dutch. So it was not an ethnic politics state. And the most powerful politician in the state was Willie Brown, and we know what Kamala
Brown. There's some connections there, yes.
But the fact is, he didn't build his politics on an African-American base in the way you would have in Illinois, let's say. So she not only didn't have the African-American experience, her African-American father was really Jamaican.
Right.
But she also came to maturity politically in a state where racial politics was not a big deal, and to the extent that it is now, it's mostly Hispanic ethnic politics. So I can see why there's not a close.
Right. Well, it was one of the things that Trump was trying to address at the NABJ, and he tried to address it a little bit at the debate, and it just, you can't do that in a short fashion. So I understand everything that you were saying, and there are valid points to make about her, but again, it's real tough to do in short form. All right, Charles. Hey, by the way, did you know that Kamala Harris was a prosecutor? I've heard rumors to that. She's told a few people that.
Well, the striking thing about that is actually it means that she has to skip over her years in the Senate and her years as vice president.
She tries to do that for sure.
There's zero achievements in those years.
Charles, great to have you. Have a great week. We'll talk again soon. Appreciate it.
Good. Great.
Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. I'm Sue Thomas because I've lost him. I don't know where he is. He's somewhere in the building. He may have actually gone to the restroom. But while he's gone, I've got Ethan in here with me, and he's running the board. And I just sent over to Ethan today this week's History of the Lou with Sue. That's what I got to talk about, Ethan. And this week it is kind of the history of the Central West End. And I've got Patrick Murphy on, if you've ever watched him on Channel 9. He did a really nice documentary about the Central West End, because It was a really cool neighborhood, and then it went down, and then they kind of brought it back. And Candace O'Connor is also in with him, and she wrote a book about it. So if you like St. Louis history, you can tune in 97.1 on Sundays at 6 a.m. and at 6 p.m., and you can listen to the history of the Lou with Sue.
I tell you what, it's been really cool to see a lot of the different people you've been able to interview through that. And you, I mean, you really are, you know, you're a couple months into it now. You're really touching on a lot of different areas. What's been your favorite one so far through these last couple of months?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure that I have one. I really enjoyed talking to Andy, who owns Crown Candy Kitchen. And the history of that, because that store goes back so far. They've been in that location forever. And he talks about having to give up metal stands. You know, they had stands where you got to eat ice cream during the World Wars because it was they were donating everything, all the metal to the war. And now that's why they've got wooden booths. Then I had in a couple of guys today from the Fox who worked with Stan Kahn. I got this really nice email from a woman who said, Sue, can you talk about Stan Kahn and the Fox? And I thought, okay. So we called these two guys up and they were adorable. So I don't know. I'm learning a lot and hopefully that's good. Oh, thanks for coming back to your own show.
Wait, can I tell you what happened?
Yes, please.
Not that it's going to matter at this point. I had to go talk to the boss. Uh-huh. And I honestly, this is Ethan. This is why when I came out, I said, we're okay now. And you said, yeah, because I thought it was the end of the hour in my mind. So we have several breaks. Uh-huh. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm not trying to lie about this.
No, I get it.
I walked out because I was like, I need to talk to Steve about something. And I completely thought it was the end of the hour. And that's why I checked with him, because we time out the end of the hour with your traffic.
Yeah.
And but thank you for covering.
Sure.
All of a sudden,
are you listening on the way back going, why are we talking about history
of
the Lou with
Sue? No, I looked at my watch and I'm like, oh, wait a second. It's not past 4 o'clock. It's before 4 o'clock.
Okay, I've done this before, so I actually am sympathetic. One day, they went to me for traffic, and I wasn't there. And I said, I am so sorry. I just thought it was over.
Yeah, I don't do this very often. This I don't do very often. But look, we're going to wrap things up for this hour, because I think we need to do that. We'll come back. We got traffic, and then hour number two with Sue's News. I'll try to pay a little closer attention to the clock and all that stuff. How about that?
That'd be great.
It's like my first day in radio or something like that. Hang in there.
Get more at 971talk.com.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.